Mr. L.S. Eldridge here, Tuesday, April 29th.
Hey, good evening. Parshas Kedoshim contains quite a smorgasbord of potential topics. Quite a bit of the canon of Benazim Moschavero can be found in Parshas Kedoshim, which is interesting in itself because the whole theme of Kedoshim maybe is more of an Adam L'Makom kind of theme, but the mitzvahs that it contains within it are a lot of the basic principles of an Adam L'Chavero, including of course the Ahav L'Rech Kamocha, that's the core foundation of all of our interactions with others. We devoted a few weeks to earlier in the year in our whole Chesed series. And one pasuk which is interesting, which we've spoken about a little bit in the past, but it's really a humongous topic which we'll talk about forever, but we'll still look at it a little bit tonight, is the pasuk of L'chmi'iva L'shitei Mechshol, which the truth is, it's not quite clear what category that falls into. Is that a Ben Adam L'Makom idea, or is it a Ben Adam L'Chavero idea? And that really may be at the core of the whole question. The pasuk with Nivelo Shitei Mechshol, on the surface, translating the words, what it sounds like it's referring to is if you see a blind person walking down the street, so you shouldn't decide that it would be a fun project, a fun joke, to put a rock in front of his feet, to trip him up, to put a stumbling block in front of him. So that's the type of prohibition that, when you hear about that, so your reaction is similar to what the Gemara sometimes has a phrase, the Chibri Shi Ashkinan. Is the Torah addressing itself to evil people? Would anyone think that this is an appropriate thing to do? And we need the Torah to come in specifically say, by the way, this is not a good idea. It's hard to imagine that that's the kind of population we're addressing. And indeed, Chazal tell us that there are other interpretations as well. And these are apparently also on a level in the Torah, that this pasuk is understood not only as referring to that, but also as referring to, as the Gemara tells us in Masech Shavuot Zara and Tzachim in Midrash Chazal, refers also to giving people bad advice. So if you tell somebody, I've got a terrific house for you to buy, and the truth is there's all kinds of problems with it, doesn't have any floors, whatever it is, but you, for whatever reason, want to sell it, you're a real estate agent, you have to get rid of your friend's real estate agent, whatever it is, so you're giving somebody advice that's not helpful for them for whatever other motive. So that's a problem with Ne'eva L'Shitei Mechshol. And perhaps the most well-known interpretation that's really the focus of a lot of the analysis, is the idea that one is not supposed to help somebody commit a transgression, not supposed to help somebody perform an Avera. So the Gemara gives funny examples, not the examples you necessarily would have thought of. I give the example of a Nazir drinking wine. It's a Nazir, I guess, you know, it's Dafyomi also, and Nazir is Dafyomi. So a Nazir is not supposed to drink wine. So if somebody hands a cup of wine to a Nazir, provides him with the wine, so that's a violation of Ne'eva L'Shitei Mechshol. The other example the Gemara gives over there, again, is somewhat of a surprising example, that you shouldn't give an Eiver Menachai to a Ben Noach. Ben Noach being basically any human being who is prohibited in eating a limb of a living animal, so that's the type of non-kosher that applies to all of humanity. And apparently the Gemara is going out of its way to show that it's not only a Jewish concept, that even by non-Jews as well, anything that is spiritually problematic for anybody, so you're not supposed to help them out with that. You're not supposed to provide for them the Aveda. Now just to clarify some of the background here, the Gemara says that strictly speaking, in order to violate, actually, on a biblical level, with Ne'eva L'Shitei Mechshol, so you need to be an integral part of the process. It has to be that you're vital to what's going on. That's what the Gemara calls Shrei Avra Dinara, the two halves of the river. So essentially what's happening is the Nazir is on the opposite side of the river from the wine, and you're on the side with the wine. So he needs you in order to get the wine. If you're not going to help him, he can't do it. So you're a crucial part of the process, and that's the situation where we have the biblical prohibition. But if the situation was that they were both on the same side of the river, so we call Chad Avra Dinara, that essentially he could get it himself. He's just asking you to help him out, but if you don't help him out, he'll still get it. So then that's not prohibited on a level in the Mahatot.
But if you bring the wine.
If you bring the wine that wasn't there before.
Yeah. If you left
it inside the river, but you that's the point, that basically he asked you to do, he asked you to get it for him, but he could have gotten it himself. So now what you're kind of touching upon is that it's a little bit subjective, because depending on how far you want to go, anything could fit into either side of the equation. Because anything, if you want to try hard enough, he'll find some way to do it even without you. And even on the same side of the river, you're making it happen quicker, you're making it happen easier. Presumably, you're the first person that could get it to. So what makes something fall into one category or the other is not an obvious question, and that's something Post can deal with a little bit, because it's not necessarily an obvious call what puts you into one category or the other. But speaking in broad terms, if you're crucial to the process, you more or less can't do it without you, that makes it l'fnei iver min ha'Torah, the culture of Denara, and if he basically could do it without you, that makes it Chad Avra Denara, and then it's not prohibited min ha'Torah. That doesn't mean it's not prohibited mid Rabbanan. The Rishonim, the Rush, and others, the Ran, both in the Masechah Shabbos in the beginning and in the Masechah Avodah Zarah, tell us that there is a concept called Misayeya. Misayeya, which we find by positives also. The Ran tells us in the Masechah Kedushin that if you help somebody do a mitzvah, then you are considered to be a part of the mitzvah. Now it's interesting though, it's not exactly parallel, because there, the helping is usually a crucial role. The Ran over there in Kedushin is talking about the role of the woman in the marriage, and the assumption that, which is not necessarily obviously the case, but if we assume that only men have a mitzvah of Kedushin and women don't have a mitzvah of Kedushin, so the Ran there says, still, a woman plays a pretty important role, you can't do it without her, and therefore that role of Misayeya gives her a mitzvah as well. And that's why the Gemara uses the expression mitzvah bo yosem shlucho by a man, and mitzvah bo yosem shlucho clearly calls the act of kedushin from a mitzvah. So around there says, well, if she's helping out, that's also a mitzvah. So there, it's a different mitzvah, because the mitzvah is crucial. You can't get married without a woman. So that is a vital part of the equation. Although you could argue you can marry somebody else. So he doesn't necessarily have to marry that woman. So maybe that's where the parallel fits a little bit better. But here, it specifically means, the way it's used by these Rishonim, it specifically means that you're not crucial. That the prohibition of l'fnei iver on a level min ha'Torah is not actually taking place, and we're talking about a prohibition midrabanan of helping out misayeya l'idei over aver. Now, again, this is just a parenthetical point. There is a lot of discussion as to what exactly that should be categorized as. So is this l'fnei iver midrabanan, that essentially we have when you're crucial, and midrabanan even when you're not crucial? Or maybe this is a whole different issue. It's another pasuk in this week's parasha. There's quite a bit in this week's parasha. Another pasuk in this week's parasha called that if you have somebody who's doing the wrong thing, so you're supposed to set them straight. You're supposed to try to rebuke them. So now there's a question how exactly we're supposed to do that nowadays. The Gemara already suggests in the time of the Chazal that people no longer knew how to do this effectively. So one could argue, one could debate, to what extent I have to actively try to interfere if I see somebody doing something wrong. But it's pretty clear that even nowadays I shouldn't help, I shouldn't make it easier for that to happen. So Misayeya, one could argue that if you're playing a participatory role in any avera, that's certainly counter the whole spirit of Tochacha. Maybe you can't stop it, but you shouldn't be helping. So that idea of Tochacha might really be the source of this concept. So this notion that even when you're not crucial, you shouldn't help out with the other area, maybe that's a form of l'fnei, or maybe it's really from a whole different area of Halacha, it's from a different Pasuk, it's a problem of Bittul Tochacha. That could be. But in any event, we're talking about this prohibition of l'fnei iver, so that's how it seems to be defined, with this focus on your playing a crucial role, what's called Shrei Avra Denara. So what emerges is we essentially have three different prohibitions that all tie to the same pasuk. The prohibition of tripping up a blind man, the prohibition of giving somebody bad advice, and the prohibition of helping somebody to sin. It's interesting, there's some who suggest in the Chatzinach in Reish Lamed Zayin, where he talks about this mitzvah, so he quotes somebody who says that it's actually not even the first way of interpreting it, the one that we said is too shocking to imagine it's a possibility. So some say, right, it's not a possibility. The pasuk doesn't apply on that level at all. It only applies in the level that Chazal has told us. And others say that's hard to say, because we have a principle that ein mikra yotze midei pshuto, that sukkim can mean other things, but they always mean at least what they sound like. So therefore, to say it doesn't include this at all is difficult. So there's some discussion, as Mechasuna quotes, grammatically, is that the way you would have said it? Maybe you would have said this in either a little sussin, if so, the whole language maybe is a little bit off. So that's a discussion if that's true or not. But in any event, any way you look at it, it's not a good idea. It's not the way to behave. I think we discussed a few weeks ago, well, this is one of the possible sources. It's also quoted for the issue of Nezikin, that you can't hurt people or things, so that is taking the pasuk literally. But the other two interpretations, in any event, one could pose the following question. And this is a question which you don't find so explicitly discussed. Achronim basically talk about two or three essential questions in this sugya. But I think it really all boils down to this question. So I'd like to use this question first and see how it might help us understand some of the other questions. What's going on here when Chazal say that Lifnei Iver is violated in these other scenarios, bad advice or helping somebody to sin? What's going on? Is it that the pasuk means don't trip up blind people? And Chazal tell us through Torah Shebal Peh that these are also additional levels of interpretation that also relate to the pasuk? Or maybe we should say no, there's nothing to do with that. This is very straightforward. It's one pasuk that speaks very broadly and includes a lot of things. And the pasuk just means don't take advantage of somebody else's handicap, of somebody else's disadvantage. And it applies in all the different realms. So it applies to, let's say, somebody who can't see physically and making him trip is taking advantage of the handicap. It applies to somebody who is at risk, let's say, financially, because he doesn't know where to invest his money, and you take advantage of that by giving him bad advice. And it applies to somebody who's got a handicap spiritually. If somebody has a tendency to stumble spiritually, to fall in this way, so to take advantage, to help them out, and to make them trip, so that's a problem. So maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there aren't extra interpretations. These are not different prohibitions. It's all one idea, one very broad concept. Don't take advantage of somebody's handicap. And these different commodities are just telling us different arenas in which it applies. It's all one idea. So I think understanding that question is relevant to understanding a lot of the discussion that we find in the Achronim concerning this issue. It really all comes back to that point. And just to mention with one more theoretical point that illustrates this, illustrates it well theoretically, while the other points are much more practical. The prohibition of Nivra Lo Shitei Mitzol, it's allowed in the Torah, it has the word lo. And yet, it's pretty much agreed by almost all Rishonim, if not all Rishonim, that there is no punishment of Malchus for this. One doesn't follow normal rules of Alav and get the punishment. So why not? Alav in the Torah, why shouldn't you get it? So the question is, what exception does it fall on? A few weeks ago we talked about Tashbisu, how we know there are a whole bunch of different exceptions for Alavin. So what exception does Lifnei Lo Shitei Mitzol fall under? So some say that it falls under an exception called Lav Shebeklalos, which roughly translated means that if you have a prohibition in the Pasuk and the Torah which breaks out into many different interpretations, and you have more than one Isser coming from one Pasuk, so then you don't get Malchus for those Isser. A little bit of a Machlokus if you only don't get Malchus for the additional things beyond the Pshat of the Pasuk or for any of them, but in any event, certainly numbers 2 and 3 you don't get Malchus for. So some say that's what's going on here. Lav Shebeklalos. So to say such a thing, you're saying that there are different concepts. To say that there's different ideas that are all coming out of this pasuk and they're not related to each other. And alternatively, you could say that's not the case at all. You could say it's not a Lav Shebeklalos. You could say, no, these are all one idea that all fits into this broad umbrella of taking advantage of somebody's handicap. So this really affects, I said, we're not sure whether this is an Aveir ben Adam L'makom or Aveir ben Adam L'chaveiro. So the truth is, it depends. How exactly do you understand what's going on here? And Rav Moshe Feinstein actually has a truth about this. Because if I understand it, that we're talking about not hurting people, not taking advantage of their handicap, and everything's about that. So even when I, let's say, give somebody a pork sandwich to eat, so essentially what I'm doing is an Aveir ben Adam L'chaveiro. Who am I hurting? I'm hurting him by tripping him up. And therefore, even though the Avera we're talking about is Ben Adam L'Makom, but my role is a Ben Adam L'Chavera role. Or alternatively, you could say differently. You could say, and this is how many Achronim understood what's going on here, is that the idea of Lufne Iver is an idea, what you might call in American law, of accessory. And somebody who is a co-conspirator, somebody who is part of a crime in maybe in a non-active stage. I was just actually just reading about the Nuremberg trials and part of the chidushim that they had to establish in order to make the Nuremberg trials stick. The issues of superior orders, that's a famous one, but one of the issues was the whole idea of conspiracy was a chidush, and it was not at all so punished that was something that you could prosecute for, that if people didn't actually pull the trigger, but did other things to make it possible, or had other roles in the planning or something, the idea that you could prosecute for that was a chiddush. It wasn't such an obvious concept 60 years ago. So maybe that's what's being innovated here, that if somebody plays a key role in something, even if they don't actually do it, so that makes them a co-conspirator, makes them an accessory, and you're equally chayv. You're equally it's as if you did. So that's how a number of achronim understand what's going on. So if that's the case, so then it's essentially a ben adam l'makom. Right? That basically God doesn't want this guy eating pork, and I shouldn't be helping him eat pork. I am participating in what's going on in the aver ben adam l'makom. So that's a question you could pose. Is it an aver ben adam l'makom or an aver ben adam l'chavero? And as he points out, so what difference is it going to make is also discussed in a later sermon. What difference is it going to make? So I guess in that case, the local nafkamina is nafkamina from mechila. So you have to ask for forgiveness if you help somebody do an avera. So did you hurt them or did you hurt God? It's interesting, somebody once pointed out to me many years ago, I thought this was very nice, Aaron has quoted this and ever since a guy in yeshiva named Mendel Breitstein, he quoted this name ever since, I thought it was very nice, Aaron, that there is a well-known debate, which I'm sure I've mentioned many times, between the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter about whether you should ask somebody from the Chila if you speak Lashon Hara about them. If you said something bad about them and they don't know about it, so Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said you shouldn't ask them for mechila because you're going to have to hurt their feelings. You have to violate a Naz Dvarim in order to ask for mechila. And it sounds like from the Sefer Chavetz Chaim like you should ask mechila, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said don't. So this guy pointed out that maybe this is another instance where this question comes up. Because imagine, let's say, the following scenario. Let's say I invite somebody over for Pesach and I feed him bread. And I violate Lufne Iver L'Shitei Mechshol, I give him bread to eat on Pesach. Then comes Shavuos, I stay up all night and I learn about Lufne Iver and all that and how I'm in trouble. So comes Yom Kippur time, I want to ask him for Mechila. Problem is, it's been 6 months in between. This person also went to that program on Shavuos, he's done Shuva, he's now complete Baal Shuva, he's never going to eat bread on Pesach again. So we know that the prohibition on Asavar means I can't remind the Baal Shuva of what he used to do wrong. So if I come up to him before Yom Kippur and I say, listen, I have to ask you for forgiveness because I once helped you eat bread on Pesach. So I'm not allowed to say that. I'm not allowed to remind him of his past transgressions. So it's another example where asking Mechila may come into conflict with Anas Devarim, and it's an interesting question whether that should take priority or not. So this question very much really goes to the question that we started with. What's going on here? If you want to take the view that Achronim has, or at least suggest, that we're dealing here with an accessory principle. So we're saying that if you help out in creating an Avera, even if you didn't pull the trigger, you're just as guilty. So then, that doesn't read with the Pasuk at all. That is a total deviation from the model of the blind person tripping. Because if I ask you, why is that prohibited? There's no Torah. We understand why it's prohibited. It's prohibited because I'm hurting him. No one would say, well, it's prohibited because if I help him fall, then it's like I fall myself and I also scrape my knee. Obviously, that's not what's going on. So when we're talking about if we want to impose that interpretation on the other level, so we have to say it's not the same concept. It's a whole other concept that from Tarsh of Alper we know is also connected to this process. So this very much goes to the question of how do we read the Pesukim? Do we read the Pesukim as one umbrella theme, or do we read it as breaking out into different concepts which aren't really related to each other? Hi.
The person who was misled,
mm-hmm. So it depends on what we mean by misleading. You see, that's also a big discussion, which we'll see if we have time to... So it's a question if that's what we're talking about, which actually is a separate point. I'm not sure if we'll get to it tonight, but I'll take the opportunity of questions to briefly touch upon it. Maybe we'll detour into that point for a second, just because you bring it up. So is that the case? The person was misled? So do we mean that you're telling somebody to eat bread when they don't know it? That's not necessarily the premise at all. The premise might be that he knows full well. His being an Iver is in the sense of his temptation, the fact that he is not strong enough to resist the temptation to do the Avera. He's ready to do the Avera. He's ready to eat bread on Pesach, and you make it possible for him. That's the stumbling block part. So who says he's being misled in an intellectual sense, in an educational sense? Maybe he does know. So this is actually a big topic. Do we say that this applies only to a shogeg, or do we say that it applies maybe only to a mezid, or do we say it applies to both, which is a big discussion in the Achronim, and it's not so clear. But there is an important discussion about this in Ashalos and Tshuvas Achiyaza, and I'll come back to this point, but I'll mention in a second. I want to say one word of introduction to that, so we'll come back. Sorry? It very much does, in a sense. Right, so I want to mention one other point before going to Achiyaza, so we'll hold off on that for a second. We'll see how it fits in. So basically, this question of are you actually an accessory to the crime? This is a topic of extensive discussion among the Achronim, and there's a lot of proofs one way or another. Just to quickly mention a few of them. So there is a Mishnah in the beginning of Maseches Shabbos, where I mentioned before some of the Rishonim introduced this idea of Messiah of the Rabbanan version, because there is this Mishnah over there. So the first Mishnah in Shabbos talks about carrying and bringing something in and out of the house. So the first Mishnah talks about an Ani who comes to a house, and he asks for bread, and the Baal HaBayis gives him bread, so he's basically taking bread out of the house into the outside. So there's all kinds of different permutations. The Baal HaBayis sticks his hand out of the house, the Ani sticks his hand in the house, takes it bread this way, takes bread that way. So the Mishnah says, if you do it this way, he's chayiv, and he's chayiv. This way, they're both parties, or this way, he's chayiv, he's positive. So some are showing a mask, wait a minute, how could I ever have a scenario where one guy is chayiv and one guy is not? Don't we have a concept called l'fnei l'sitim mitzvah? So if I'm helping you do the avera, so by definition we're both chayiv. Can't be that one guy's good and one guy's bad. It doesn't work. So some rishonim say, you're right, that's a problem. Therefore we have to figure out a way that it's not l'fnei iver. And they come up with a reason why that's not the case. And others say simply, great, we're not talking about l'fnei iver here. We're talking about Hilchos Shabbos. You want to tell me that you nailed them on another charge? That's great. But as far as Hilchos Shabbos, we're not learning Maseches l'fnei iver. We're learning Maseches Shabbos, and therefore we're only interested in who's violating Hilchos Shabbos. Exactly. So the issue there, as the Achronim explained, is what happens when I help somebody do the Aver? Do I join in that Aver? In which case it becomes impossible to separate the two. And the only way to separate the two is to find some reason why l'fnei iver doesn't apply. Or do we say, no, it's essentially a whole separate thing. This l'fnei iver charge is not about Hilchos Shabbos. I could say you're a violation of Hilchos Shabbos and you're a violation of l'fnei iver, and it's two separate things. And one is a lav with no malchus, and one is a chiyuv karis, and they're not connected. I don't have to list them two together. So that's essentially that question. And one area in which it's going to make a huge difference is the area of, let's say, Hari Vayavar. That we know that there are certain averis, and this is a very practical point, that there are certain averis which one is required to give up his life rather than violate the big three. So a very important, very practical question is, so what happens if you're not asked to commit one of these averis, but you're asked to help somebody commit one of these averis? You're asked to make avodah zarah possible. You're asked to make murder possible. So you have to give up your life in order to avoid that. So that was a topic of a machlokas and Rishon. This is a very complicated proof. We probably shouldn't take the time right now to explain the proof of the machlokas between the Baal HaMor and other Rishonim and Sanhedrin, that fine dollar. And it seems to go to this point. It seems to go to this question. Do we say that as an accessory, and again this certainly goes back to the Nuremberg point, do we say as an accessory you are fully guilty of this heinous capital crime? Or do we say, no, the other person is guilty of the heinous capital crime. You're guilty of tripping him up, which is a whole different issue and doesn't subject you to the same rules as committing that crime itself. You, this guy hurt society, you hurt him, that's all. You hurt him, and therefore it's a whole different level of prohibition. So the introduction to the Achiyaza that I wanted to say is there is a sefer which most people never heard of except for this position. This position becomes very well known, the sefer Emunah Shmuel. It's an early work of Charles and Truva's quoted in the commentaries on the side of the page of Sofanarach. And this position is probably the most famous position that he took. The commentaries on the side of the Shulchan Aruch quote this, that the Emunah Shmuel said that Lifnei Iver doesn't apply if the prohibition doesn't apply to the person who's the machshel, the person who is doing the tripping, if doing the making the trip, putting the stumbling block. If he's not subject to the prohibition for whatever reason, so he doesn't have a prohibition to trip up somebody else. And it's a big question if that's true or not. It's a lot of proofs back and forth. One could raise the question, well, Gemara gave the example of Nazir, so who's assuming that the person providing the wine is a Nazir? So the Mishnah Shmuel anticipated that already. He discusses that, and he says, well, that's not true that the prohibition of Nazir don't apply to you. They do apply to you. Kishayi a Nazir. If you would decide to be a Nazir, if you decide you want to take a Nazirus, you'll have these prohibitions. So the concept applies. Right now it's not applicable, but maybe next week you'll decide to take Nazirus, and it will apply. So the rules of Nazirus apply to everyone. They're not active all the time. But if you're, for whatever reason, you would really be removed from the prohibition, so then you wouldn't be prohibited in helping somebody else. So if you take the understanding that it's all one big concept, and we're talking about hurting people, so what difference does it make whether you're chayav or not? If it's bad for that person, so then it's bad for that person. It doesn't make a difference how it applies to you. It only would make sense if you take the other interpretation. If you say that it's about your joining in the aveira, so maybe you could say, well, I can join this aveira because it doesn't apply to me. It doesn't have I'm not prohibited in this aveira, so therefore I shouldn't have any prohibition to be an accessory to something which I'm not stopped from doing in the first place. And there's a certain logical compulsion to that also. Like we say, then if the guy playing the secondary role, again, a big Nuremberg chalk on, if the guy playing a secondary role shouldn't be more severe than the primary role. So it shouldn't be worse for me to help to do something that I'm allowed to do myself. So there's a certain logically compelling aspect to that. Maybe that's where he's coming from. So the question was raised for the Achiezer. This finally comes back to your questions. The Achiezer was asked, the problem is, how could the Emunah Shmuel be right that even if you want to say that I am not subject to whatever prohibition it is that I'm helping somebody do, so shouldn't we still say that it should at least fall into the second category of neither? It's bad advice. Bad advice, gadol mizeh. I can't tell you to invest in something I know is bad for you. I shouldn't be able to tell you to do a transgression that's bad for you, even if it doesn't apply to me. So here's where Achiezer gets into this discussion. Well, maybe no. Maybe when it comes to bad advice, the person is being misled. He doesn't know what the story is. So you're telling him something which he doesn't realize is bad for him. But when it comes to the Aveira, maybe we should say, listen, Aveira only applies this to a Mazid. It only applies to somebody who does know. And therefore, if he knows, and then he's choosing of his own free will to do it, your prohibition to help him is only if you... It's only if you're actually part of the Aveira also. So that distinction becomes important, and that's part of this whole discussion. Do we say it only applies to the Shogeg, or it only applies to a Mezid, or both, or either one? So you could say that they're both covered under two different categories. That if the guy's a Shogeg, then it's prohibited under the category of bad advice. If the guy's a Mezid, it's prohibited under the category of helping out with the prohibition. Now, again, if they're all one big concept anyway, then it wouldn't matter whether we put it in this group or that group. But if they are different prohibitions that all come from the same place, then there may be differences. It might make a difference. Right, but it could be the two different types of either. Right, it could be either as far as knowing what's going on, or either as far as his tendency to do an aveir. So then there's a second question, which, actually, I said the two big questions that Chonon talked about. So one big question is this question of whether you're joining into the aveir or whether it's a separate kind of idea, and there's a lot more to say about that. Really a many-hour topic. The other question that Achronim like talking about a lot, most often quoted source on this is Yad Malachi. It's a book of Kolalim. I don't know exactly when it was written. Who poses the following question, which doesn't sound so practical, but if you think about it for a minute, it makes a big difference. The question is as follows. Let's say I give somebody a non-kosher food. I give somebody a pork sandwich on Tuesday night, right now, Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. And he says, okay, I'll save it in my fridge, and he eats it tomorrow for lunch at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. So when did I violate with Neither? Did I violate with Neither when I gave it to him tonight? Or did I violate it tomorrow when he eats it? Now that sounds like a technicality. Okay, so who cares? So, you know, then the trustee goes, my lawyer up in St. Ryan's going to say, was this one or that one? So a few hours earlier, a few hours later, does it matter? Right, exactly. It can make a very big difference. What if he doesn't actually do it? So if he, in the meantime, doesn't do the Aveira, so have I dodged the bullet? Or do we say that, no, that the very act of putting the mikshol in front of him is problematic? Now, in order to say that much, in order to say that the very act of putting it is problematic, so we have to at least define it as a mikshol. It's not always going to be the case. Let's say, for example, I'm a Rebbe in Yeshiva, and I find some non-kosher food, and the student has non-kosher food. I confiscate it, and I give it to the principal. So am I overlisting an Iver because I gave the principal the non-kosher sandwich? So no, I can assume he's not going to eat it. I assume he's not an Iver. So there has to be some status where it's likely enough to happen that he's an Iver in order to declare it that way. But maybe there's still a distinction between him actually doing it and not actually doing it. So the first step of that question is, when do I violate it? Do I violate it when I gave it to him? Or do I violate it when he actually does it? And there are proofs on both sides. When the Amalachi quotes some of these proofs, on the one hand, the Gemara talks about, the Gemara says that one shouldn't strike his adult son because it's a violation of Ne'ivir, because he's going to be tempted to hit back. It's a very big principle in Chinuch. All the books about Chinuch will discuss the source great length. So, you know, we assume, understandably, there's always a responsibility on the child to be respectful of the parents. That's, of course, step one, but the Gemara also says the parents have to know how not to provoke the kids. If the parents make the kids likely to act rebellious, there's a responsibility on their level as well. So the Gemara says not to hit an adult son, and the Rishonim actually say it doesn't mean adult like bar mitzvah, it means like 5 or 6. It means when they're old enough to have their own dash and act back, then that's already inappropriate. And it sounds like from the Gemara that that's the favor right away, regardless of what they do. It doesn't matter where they actually hit back. But putting in a situation where that's likely to happen is situationless neither. Similarly, there's a Gemara about Metzia, which is a topic of tremendous discussion among the halachic svarim because it's not followed at all. Certainly not in normal day-to-day life. And it's a big discussion why it's not followed, why people are not careful about this. But the Gemara says in Bav Metzia that one should not lend money without witnesses. Now, people maybe are careful about this in cases of big loans, but certainly smaller loans, people don't make a point of always having witnesses. And the Gemara seems to say that that's a violation of Ne'ivir. And as Rashi explains, because when he realizes there's no witnesses, so he thinks, okay, maybe I can get away with this. I'll deny it ever happened, and no one's ever going to know. So again, it doesn't sound like this actually takes place. It doesn't sound like the guy actually is going to do it and then it's with Ne'ivir. It sounds like the very act of lending the money that way is with Ne'ivir. And again, practically why people aren't careful about that, there's a lot of big literature about that in the Achron and why that's not observed so much in practice. But on the other hand, there are the proofs other ways. The Gemara has a very strange case in the Seches Kedushin where the Gemara talks about, again, about a Kibbut Av Eim issue where somebody wanted to test his son and he wanted to tear up expensive silk in front of him to see how he would react, if he would yell at his father. And the Gemara says, but maybe he will yell at you, and then you'll have violated with Nevel Sita Nesel. So there, it sounds like it's only if it actually takes place. So there were a lot of proofs back and forth, and this is extensively discussed in the literature, what exactly is going on. So what you see here is, again, these two possibilities. That if we're talking about joining in the Aveira, we're talking about you being an accessory, so then you can make a case that it's only when the Aveira actually takes place that I'm in violation. And if it doesn't take place, so again, I dodged the bullet, I'm lucky, then I don't have to have the responsibility for it happening. But that would be the case only if it actually takes place. But if the idea is that I shouldn't put a stumbling block, so here again, we could look exactly at the pasuk. So what does the pasuk say? The pasuk doesn't necessarily say, don't trip up a blind person. It says, don't put a rock in front of him, don't put a stumbling block. It sounds like from the pasuk that if he happens to avoid it, if he doesn't actually trip, you're still in violation. So one could use that model here also. One could say that you shouldn't tempt people to do others, and even if they overcome it, even if they throw it out, whatever it is, they may still actually be a violation of the prohibition. Either way, it may still be relevant. So again, this goes very much back to this question of how do you read the psukim, how do we read this whole process of learning it out, what exactly is going on there. So a lot of other issues here. Just to mention one or two more, there is also a discussion in the Rishonim, what's the story if the prohibition that we're dealing with is the prohibition midrabban. So if the prohibition midrabban, you basically have at least three views in the Rishonim what's going on. There are some who say that if it's a prohibition, made Rabbanan, there isn't any violation of Lifnei at all. Lifnei Iver only applies on the same level of Minat Torah. There's another view that says that there is a prohibition, but it becomes Lifnei Iver Rabbanan, that it's on the same level. And there's another view that it's Nisa Darais. So, leave aside the first view for a second. If you want to say that you join in on the Avera, so that we could hear the idea that it's only on a level midrabanan, because again, shloyehei tafel chamim and eker, it doesn't seem to make sense to say that if you're an accessory, you're worse than what he's doing. So if he's doing something, it's only a prohibition midrabanan, and you're helping him, and that's what makes you guilty, so then presumably that's the same thing. But if the idea is that it should be more than that, that you should be chayv and atar, the question's a good one, right? If I were about shloyehei tafel chamim and eker, so maybe the idea is it's not about helping him, that's not what's going on. It's about hurting him. It's about the fact that you're causing him problems. So it doesn't matter what type of problems you're causing him or what realm it's in. The same way you're hurting him by giving him bad advice, so you're hurting him by helping him violate Nisa Drabbanan, and that could still be the prohibition min ha-Torah of Lusni Iver Lusitin Nisa. So what about the view that says it's nothing? What about the view that says it's not Lusni Iver at all? It's a little bit of a hard view to understand. Rav Scheinberg has a little bit of piece about this in the Sefer Mishmar Chaim, where he suggests that this may go into the whole separate discussion after today, the question of whether the Rabbanans have inherent status in that we call an Issa Chetzi. Do we understand that when something is prohibited in HaTorah, then it's inherently bad, a piece of pork is inherently bad? Well, if something is prohibited in the Rabbanan, the object is neutral, and it's only the way we relate to it that has rules and regulations. So if that's the case, you want to say in a little bit of a populist way that maybe when you're dealing with a biblical prohibition, something could be actively, objectively defined as a michshol, as a stumbling block. When we're talking about something that's drabbanan, it's only a question of how we relate to it, so the object doesn't have a status as a stumbling block, and therefore, technically speaking, maybe you can't violate with neighbor in that way. It's a little bit of a bulkhead. It's also a lengthy discussion how it's ever permitted to take anybody to Beis Din. If the assumption is when you're dealing with a Beis Din, let's say, very often the case is you think the other guy is lying. So if you know the other guy is going to take a shvuah in order to defend himself, and you believe that he's going to swear falsely, so how is that not a problem with neither? So that's a whole discussion in the Achronim, and also it goes into a lot of details, maybe beyond our scope. But I want to be able to chaz a little bit, just to go to one last important point. Again, there's a host of many issues that really tie into all of this. Somebody just told me today, actually, I have to take a look. Somebody called me and wanted to find it, and I have to find it so I can get back to where it is, that apparently the Kiva Eger has a tshuva somewhere that it's, I believe this, that it's permissible to set up a kohen with a grusha, set up a kohen with a divorced woman, if you know the alternative is he's going to marry a non-Jewish woman. That even though there's a prohibition for a kohen to marry a grusha, that wouldn't be called this neiver, because the result would be that you are reducing the level of isha. So it's interesting that to facilitate naver, which in itself reduces the level of isha, may be permitted, which is a very interesting yeshod, which is certainly very relevant to dealing in all kinds of hero situations and other types of hard calls that Rabbanim have to make. It's a very interesting possible yeshod, because this is one of the realms in which this comes up most often. It's a question of inviting people on Shabbos, so you believe that you're going to impact on them positively overall, but maybe they're going to drive to your house, or they're going to do whatever. So that's a complicated issue, which many postmen thought there were grounds to be lenient on, and certainly could it be understood as being relevant towards that equation. Because the truth is, the earlier postmen don't talk about this issue about people driving. Talk about a much more prevalent issue, which would really complicate things. Strictly speaking, it's a question, can you offer people food if you know they're not going to make brachos and they're not going to watch? So it sounds like from Shulchan Aruch actually that that's problematic, and a lot of later poskim didn't necessarily think it was such a unworkable issue. And part of the helpful point there is that those issues, even without a bracha, even without washing, are presumably issues midrabanan. And if we assume again that Lusni Iver by Drabbanan is going to be on a little bit of a different level, there's a little bit more to work with there. Also, certainly, it's not really with neighbor anyway, because they can get food somewhere else. Only question if they're going to eat at your house. It's hard to imagine that that's the only place they're ever going to eat. So a lot to work with as far as, that's a topic that a lot of posts can pick up on. And there is an important tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which is relevant to this, and which is an important principle as far as everything is concerned in this area. Rav Shlomo Zalman discusses the case. I don't know if it's exactly what's dramatic or not, but basically the scenario is, let's say you're going to invite a guy to your house on a hot summer day. It's 106 degrees outside. He's been working outside in your backyard. He's schwitzing like crazy, about to collapse. You've got this nice, tall jar of lemonade that you're drinking from, and you don't want to give him any because you think he's not going to make a bracha. So that is Rav Shlomo Zalman. You have to understand and have a little perspective here, that there's little lefneiver and there's big lefneiver. That there's little lefneiver that you're going to be machshel him and not making a bracha right now, and then there's the big lefneiver that he's going to think that religious Jews are complete jerks and he's going to hate Torah forever because you're not offering him a drink of water when he's obviously collapsing in front of you and you're enjoying yourself with this nice tall drink. So that's a much greater lefneiver than the local issue of not giving him a drink right now because you're afraid he's not going to make a bracha. So he points out it's important to keep perspective and to realize what exactly you're doing when you're impacting on a person. Are you going to impact them locally or globally? And to have that in mind and to use that perspective in making these decisions. Hi. Yeah, it's a very difficult question. And it's just about to be saved by the bell. It's a question also there, what do you mean by that? You know, it's a question of whether it's a question of him. A lot of complicated variables that come into that equation. It's a question of him not eating at all otherwise. The question of him, and also what kind of impact do you have? You see, I was thinking also sometimes you have situation, the question that's asked more frequently is when people say you're going to use it on gambling, you're going to use it on drinking or something like that. You know, so there the question is, you can't even see any value to it's a question of whether that's even called spectra or not. So that gets there's an enabling aspect that comes into play there. So that's a very complicated decision, which also takes a lot of chachmah to know how to handle properly. And that is not as complicated. You know, you certainly don't want to be paying for some of these drugs. And the question, to what extent are you deciding that? And that's really a Hilchos Shtaka question also, as well as a Lifnei question. And there's again a bit to be saved by the bell on that one. So there's too many variables to factor in and to answer that one on one foot. So the Gemara says that in general that a Lifnei Kaptina and a Lifnei de Lifnei Lo Kaptina, that if you are... That could be, but also the Gemara talks about if you're going to give to somebody, you're going to give to somebody else. And that, strictly speaking, the Gemara says that's, at least on a biblical level, that's permitted. That if you're helping somebody help somebody else, there's a middleman, and the other person's going to be doing that there. So strictly speaking, you're not liable for that. It raises again the question, what exactly are we worried about? Are we worried about hurting this guy? Or are we worried about ultimately causing an aveira in the world? And that's part of the lumdus of that. There's a whole rush there that distinguishes between Jews and non-Jews as far as that's concerned. And that's possibly relevant to that question. So there's a lot to say. It's a huge topic. It's also, as far as the direct part, it also raises the question of, let's say, a suffix, mechzol. If you don't know exactly what you're going to do for it. So if I give you drugs, that's one thing. If I give you money, maybe I'll use it for drugs. I'll use it for something else. So then the question of suffix is also part of the story. There's some who say that by definition a suffix mishal is not a mishal, and then which also goes to that question of defining a mishal. There's a lot of sub-issues. So maybe one of these days we'll flesh out some of the sub-issues. Just to deal with any one pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim is several weeks worth of discussion. Just to try to highlight some of the little we spoke about tonight. So we spoke about the fact that the pasuk with neither l'shita mishal applies mostly to people who speak too long so other people can't have a mire. That's one issue. So it could be a mikshol live up here or downstairs. Downstairs. So it won't be a mikshol on us. If it was upstairs, it would be a mikshol on everybody. So I'll try to give us time to get out of mire. But essentially three interpretations. If I trip somebody up physically, if I give somebody bad advice, or if I help somebody to do an aver. And one could pose the question, which we suggest is really the umbrella question for everything, are those three different interpretations of a pasuk, or is it all one concept? Don't take advantage of somebody's handicap in whatever realm it is, physical, monetary, spiritual, in any of the realms. And and we mentioned that there are some who say the reason there's no malchus with neither is because lots of the klalos, it breaks down to many different concepts. So that means that it's different interpretations. But alternatively, we can say it's not lots of the klalos, they're all one idea, and it's all one big thing. So the question that the Achronim have, am I an accessory, or am I hurting somebody else? So if you say it's an accessory, so that's definitely a chiddush. That doesn't have any correlation to the idea of tripping a blind man with a rock. So then that would have to mean you're reading the pasuk in a different way. While otherwise you could say that no, it's all one pasuk, but that means I'm not an accessory. It means I'm hurting somebody, and then it's a ben adam l'chaver. Rav Moshe has that suffix, because ben adam l'chaver, ben adam l'makom, and it has a possible ramification for the laws of mechila. And we discussed how the Chavetz Chaim, the Sfas Lanter, about hurting somebody's feelings, the mechila could play a role there also. And then we discussed the various proofs and the various ramifications of that question. We mentioned the whole discussion in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, where it talks about a situation of Hotzlah, where one guy is chayav, one guy is not. And we show them, say, how could it be? If neither means at least if one guy is chayav, the other guy is chayav too. So either you have to get around it and say it's not lifnei iver, or you have to say that it is lifnei iver, but essentially we're not worried about that. We're only talking about Hotzlah Shabbos, which gets to that question. And the very, very practical question of do we say the Harav Yavors apply also to Lifnei Iver by the Harav Yavors, and also the question of Yamuna Shmuel, who says that you're not over Lifnei Iver if it's not something that's prohibited to you, which would only make sense if you say it's an accessory idea and not an idea of hurting somebody else. We mentioned Reb Chaim Oz's tshuva about that, where he was asked why would that not at least be like bad advice, at least fall into that category, and there he suggests that when giving somebody bad advice, they're shogigim, they don't know what's going on, you're misleading them. And here, maybe this applies only davka to a mezid, which itself, the whole discussion is it apply equally to shogigim and mezidim or not, that's a discussion itself. Then we discussed the question of the Yad Malachi, the issue of when do you violate when you give the mechshol or when the avera takes place, which doesn't sound like it's a big deal, except it becomes a big deal if the guy never does the avera. We mentioned there are various proofs, the Gemara about not hitting your son, which the Gemara called the neiver automatically, lending money without witnesses also called the neiver automatically. On the other hand, the case of tearing up silk, it says that maybe he'll violate the avera and he'll be neiver, and that seems very much to go to this issue. And then we talked about the question of neiver by the Rabbanan. Some say it's not with neiver at all, some say it's with neiver alone, and some say it's neiver minatara. So if it's an accessory, it makes sense you're only an accessory to the extent that they're doing it. If it's about hurting them, then you're hurting them, even though they're only doing it the rabbanon, maybe you're doing it the right. So we mentioned the Steinberg's interpretation why it might not be anything at all, why it's not called a mechshol. And then we discussed the Rebbe Eger about, we have to look up, about if you're reducing their avera, even if the act you're helping is an avera, that's still not with neiver. Probably very relevant to some of the curious questions that we sometimes look at, and the question of inviting people when they're going to drive or giving them food when they're not going to make brachos, which the fact that it's abundant and they could get food elsewhere is very helpful for that. We then dodged a few other questions, pointed it on the clock, and then mentioned that Shlomo Zalman, who says that if you're going to turn somebody down for a drink and they're going to hate Torah because of it, so they're not listening either with a capital L, and that's certainly much worse than the small listening either that will be violated by having them take a drink without a bracha. We'll try to minimize the mechshol and have a few minutes and a half to get down to Myers. Have a